Hello and welcome to Outlier Parenting. I'm your host, Beth Feldman, and we're going to be having a pretty serious discussion today, and I feel like a really enlightening one, because I have an author with us today, who Peg Streep. She's been writing books for over 20 years. She has a new book out called Daughter Detox, Healing from an Unloving Mother and Reclaiming Your Life. This is her third book about the mother-daughter relationship and the only one to address the journey of healing with specific strategies and guidance. Peg is an unloved daughter herself, and the book is the culmination of close to two decades of research into how this most central of relationships affects the trajectory of a daughter's life. While her book, Mean Mothers, sketched the problem and traced how unloved daughters can become loving mothers, Daughter Detox is hands-on and proactive. She's also the book of Mastering the Art of Quitting, Why It Matters in Life, Love, and Work. And we're going to be talking about that too, because I feel that these are two important topics about when you're raising kids to be thinking of, you know, how to be a good parent, or how to really guide your kids and how to help kids, adults or kids who are going through a situation where they don't have a supportive parent in their life. So thank you, Peg, for joining me today.
And thank you for having me.
And so let's talk about the book that you that just came out. So you have personal experience about being the daughter of an unloving mother, and this led you to writing this book. So can you tell me a little bit about why you decided to do this and your personal story?
Well, I had written a book 8-9 years ago called Mean Mothers, which was really an exploration of whether or not children whose emotional daughters, whose emotional needs weren't met by their mothers in childhood could in fact become loving mothers themselves. And that was really the focus of that book. And indeed what I discovered, and it's a huge issue, by the way, because one of the fears that an unloved daughter has in adulthood is that if she does become a mother, that she will simply repeat her mother's behaviors. Because mothering is learned. It's not instinctual. Mm-hmm. And so that was an issue that was enormous in my own life, it should be said. At the time that I came of age, and started considering whether or not to become a mother, which was in the 1970s and then early 80s, psychology was really at a place where they believed that most behaviors were in fact recidivist and repetitive. In other words, the likelihood was that if your mother had been verbally abusive or emotionally unavailable or displayed other kinds of toxic behaviors, the reality of it was that you as a mother yourself would be very likely to repeat those patterns. Well, needless to say, this filled me with utter terror. Mm. And I therefore decided in my 20s and in my 30s, which was a considered decision, that I would simply not have children. Hmm. And then in my very late 30s, I reversed myself and I decided to have a child.
Okay.
So, in fact, learned a great deal about myself and trusting myself and my instincts as a parent in the process. But that book really came out of finding out whether I was an outlier of some sort, or whether or not, in fact, women who've not experienced that kind of love, maternal love in childhood, can become loving mothers. And in fact, once they become consciously aware of how they were affected by their childhoods, the answer is yes. They can monitor their own behavior and make sure that their best self shows up. Daughter Detox was actually created by Daughter Demand, mm-hmm. readers of mine who said, "Hey, Peg, Mean mothers only went so far, but you never told us what to do about it. And I thought, okay, that's fair. I didn't tell you, give you any strategies. I didn't look at the science and see how you could change yourself. And I wrote the book. I mean, that's, you know, that's so.
But what's interesting, though, is that, I mean, you are, you know, incredibly, you're very successful. You attended top universities, despite the fact that you didn't have that supportive parent in your life. So what did you do, despite the fact that you had this unloving mother in your life, to be able to still pursue your career and you know, achieve?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting is that daughters who grow up with unloving mothers often are extremely high achievers. In fact, there doesn't really seem to be a middle ground somehow. They are either changed by the experience in such a way that they become high achievers, in part, by the way, to win their mother's favor and love and attention. I mean, again, the unloving mother, the unloved daughter is always thinking of ways that somehow she can fix this, right?
Right.
So it's not unusual.
Have you seen the film I, Tonya?
No, I haven't, and I've been hearing about it from all of my readers.
Yes, you have to see it, because that's like that's a case study in unloving mothers. I mean, the Allison Janney, the mom character, is just unreal. I mean, she was horrible, she was abusive, and to your point, you know, all she wanted to do was succeed and get her mother's love, and then eventually she just wanted to get away from her mother because she was just so toxic. But
right.
I totally understand that point.
It's a fairly typical pattern, because of course the child's thinking is, well, if I become thinner, prettier, smarter, get A's, excel at athletics, excel at something, right, then she'll love me. That's one group of unloved daughters. Then there are the unloved daughters, and that's why I began by saying there's doesn't appear to be a middle ground. You have either very high achieving daughters, or you have daughters who literally cannot get out of their own way. They are underachievers to the max. They may indulge in all sorts of self-destructive behavior. And again, this is paradoxical. Self-destructive behavior is yet another way of getting your mother's attention.
Right.
And so
that makes sense.
So that they get caught in this terrible, terrible loop of being plagued by enormous, enormous self-doubt, right, where they begin something and they cannot finish, or they simply, they feel so strongly that they're going to fail at something that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're not willing to take risks and so forth. So, you know, you basically end up with these two extremes, very high-achieving daughters who end up very successful in career, profession, et cetera. And then daughters who, in fact, until they begin to heal, are really not able to succeed at much at all. There doesn't seem to be a good middle ground. Now, mind you, most of these unloving mothers care terribly about appearances. So that's another way the attention works. In other words, so, you know, the high-achieving child figures she'll get some attention. And the low-achieving acting-out child is also striving to get attention, if in a negative and destructive way.
I mean, it's interesting, because then you look at, like, I mean, everybody's obsessed with This Is Us, and the mother's the pushover mother. And you've got that at play. And I kind of look at it a lot of times where, you know, I try to kind of strike a balance between, I'm not a pushover, but I am definitely a supportive mother. But then you want to be at a place where you still need to be strict, because there are rules. And if your kid knows that they could take advantage all the time, it can really be bad. So I think that's like the other category of mom that also is not necessarily good for a kid growing up, knowing that they could take advantage of that type of mom too. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the reality of it is that toxic mothers who really essentially fail at the job, right, also don't teach boundaries. I mean, the reality of it is that boundaries are enormously important for a child's emotional and psychological growth.
Mm-hmm.
Toxic mothers, in fact, tend not to teach boundaries or observe them. So either the boundaries are simply walls. So the emotionally unavailable mother erects a wall. So the child's needs are not met, right? On the other hand, an enmeshed mother, a mother who is overly involved and invested in her child, right, mm-hmm. observes no boundaries at all. Mm-hmm. Because the attuned good mother says, you are you and you are fine as you are. Mm-hmm. And I am me and that's okay. We're not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
One of my bugaboos is the word helicopter parenting,
right?
Which makes it sound incredibly benign, and it is not.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's no more benign than narcissistic parenting,
right?
Because the reality of it is that the helicopter parent does not see her child as separate. She sees her child as an extension of herself, and that child has to live up to certain standards of behavior and achievement. And as a result, the child is essentially voiceless in all of this. I mean, you aren't doing your child any favors by doing too much for your child, not permitting your child to ever make a mistake, not to allow your child to voice an opinion. That's not good parenting.
Right. Well,
we now have this crisis, and I mean, I'm sure you've read about it. There have been all these studies, by the way, of these overly helicoptered, chosen for college-age students who are simply not able to deal with the anxiety of being on their own.
Wow.
I mean, oh, it's a huge, I mean, it's become this enormous big deal that these kids are frozen with terror at making their own choices, the possibility of failing. They're unable to manage their own emotions under stress. I mean, it's not good.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I have a daughter in college, and thankfully, you know, we kind of, you know, we raise our kids with, okay, at this age, you should be getting a job. If you're interested in this, okay, you can take a class in this. And I was really excited to talk to her yesterday because she said she's in an art program, and she walked into the class, and it was her 3D class, and they had all these sewing machines. And she said, oh, it's the whatever sewing machine, I don't know, name of it. And the professor looked at her and said, wait a second, how do you know this machine? She said, oh, I took like pre-college classes at FIT and I learned how to sew on this and it's so awesome or whatever. And she was like, holy cow, really? And it was just sort of like, okay, that to me is like, I am raising a kid who's going to be independent and doing what she loves and being self-sufficient. And I was able to like research and provide her with the tools to do it, but I wasn't sitting in class next to her saying, now this is what you need to do to sew. I couldn't sew anything. You know, I have to ask her to hem my clothes.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of look towards, I agree with you. Like I see that dynamic at play with a kid that doesn't know how to cook, that doesn't even know how to do their laundry. It's like, come on. Like there are certain things we need to let go of and let our kids do because they need to become responsible adults.
Right. But the worst part of it is, if you think about it, the unspoken message that underlies all of that helicopter parenting is, without me, you will not be able to do it.
Ugh.
And that's, see,
crazy.
That is what is really damaging.
Yeah. And
because,
they pull the plug,
and that,
yeah.
And that message, of course, and the mother, by the way, may not, in her own ambitions for the child, recognize that that is, in fact, the underlying message.
Hmm.
She may think that she's being a great mother because she's giving her child all of this direction and the tools to succeed. But in fact, what she's whispering is, you will fail unless I am there helping you.
Wow.
If you make a choice without consulting me, it will doubtless be the wrong choice. I mean, these are all
That's frightening. I mean, it's upsetting because I just, it's sort of like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I came from a stable childhood with a mom who was, you can be whatever you want to be, and they were very supportive. So it's sort of, to me, I would never want to do that to my kids. But at the same time, things that my parents didn't necessarily know about when I was growing up, I kind of, you know, I overcompensate with the research and finding out, helping to find the answers so that I can help them, but not say, okay, now why aren't you doing this? Or I don't know. I mean, it's just...
Right, but there's a huge difference between researching possible alternatives for your child and essentially making the decision for him or her.
Right, okay.
I mean, that's, you know, and it's when the parent is intrusive enough so that the child really... without not even consciously perceiving it. I mean, sometimes the child will consciously perceive it and say, hey, listen, you know, I have likes and dislikes and I want to make my own choice. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the child who doesn't even perceive the degree to which he or she is being manipulated in this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
They may actually be hobbled and unable to make their own choices. I mean, again, learning to make choices and take the risk of making the wrong choice,
right,
is an acquired skill.
And that leads us to the mastering the art of quitting, because that's
yes.
the biggest fear of rejection. I mean, I know for myself, even when I was in high school and trying out for schools or trying to get into different programs. I mean, I think when kids are going to colleges, that is that biggest, the fear of rejection and then having to kind of change course. It can be heartbreaking, but it starts when they're young. It starts when they're little kids joining a team or deciding not to pursue, you know, one thing that, you know, singing or dancing or whatever, because they just don't want to do it anymore. So we had talked about this before we got on the call, but can you talk to me about like the two different dynamics, the individual thing that you quit versus the team thing that you quit?
Well, I mean, as I said to you before we got on air, is that coming up with a hard and fast rule for when you should permit a child to quit something, it's very, very hard to come up with a kind of one-size-fits-all generalization. The culture, by the way, tends to believe wrongly that what we must teach our children is perseverance and grit. Why? Because, you know, quitters always lose. It's bad to quit. Well, that's actually not true, for one thing. If you're, you know, in a venture that's going to fail anyway, just continuing on isn't going to help you much. And the reality of it is that all human beings, in fact, are hardwired to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
It's quitting that's actually hard for people, which is why, you know, you never will find yourself in a conversation with someone whose relationship has just recently ended, and that person says, gee, I wish I'd stayed there longer. In fact, I'm willing to bet any amount of money that the conversation will go instead, gee, I wish I'd left that earlier.
Right.
ditto for jobs, ditto for really bad situations. So when, as parents, we deal with the question of whether or not a child should continue to persevere and pursue or to quit, we have to weigh the lessons, in fact, that are being imparted at that moment, right? So if this is something that the child begged you for, and you bought a piano, you hired a teacher, you paid for lessons, et cetera, right? And suddenly the child says, well, actually, no. I think I'd rather take ballet lessons. That becomes tricky because on the one hand, I think it is really okay for a child to say, actually, this is more commitment than I'm willing to make to this particular thing. This requires me to practice for 3 hours, and I'd rather be spending 3 hours reading than practicing the piano. That's a legitimate thing for a child, say, who's 12, 13, 14, to say, I have a number of things that I have to do with my free time, mom or dad. This is not how I want to spend this larger chunk of my free time. At the same time, of course, as a parent, you have to negotiate the investment that you've made in the child's pursuing this goal. And that's got to be very frankly discussed, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, I also see, like, with certain parents, like, the warning signs, you know, when your kid is doing a team sport and right before he's supposed to do that sport every week beforehand, complains of a stomach ache, doesn't want to go to practice, you know, always has an excuse. I mean, that's like the writing's on the wall. You can tell this kid's heart is not in it. And yet you keep pushing them. And I mean, after a certain point, do you just let that go for a little bit? Or do you finally throw your hands up and say, yeah, I think you're right. This isn't for you. I read the sign.
Well, I mean, again, I think it's going to depend on a lot of factors. It's going to depend on the child's initial enthusiasm for whatever this was, this activity, this goal, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to depend on the child's personality and age. Mm-hmm. Is this a child who, in fact, is pretty reliable about most things? Or is this a child, in fact, who needs a little bit more support in terms of meeting his commitments or her commitments, right? Mm-hmm. Does he or she have to be hounded to do homework?
Mm-hmm.
Does he or she have to be hounded to complete whatever minimal chores you've assigned him or her, right? So if you have a child who, in fact, has trouble as a preteen or a teen managing commitments, managing time commitments, and so forth, then the issue of quitting, of course, becomes much more laden and a larger issue than it would for the kid who, you know, comes home from middle school, marches to his or her bedroom, does his or her homework, and you never, ever, ever have to rifle through that child's backpack because it's done.
Right.
So, you know, as a parent, with that pretty disciplined child, when that child decides that it's just not how he or she wants to spend time, that's a pretty legitimate thing to bring up, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The other thing that I find too is what happens when your kid has their heart set on something and they get rejected, they don't get it. And that's at that moment they decide, that's it, I'm done, I'm not going to do this again. And that alters the course of whatever it is that they're doing. I mean, I know that as adults that happens. I remember decisions that I've made because, oh, forget it. If I can't get it the first time, then I'm not going to do it. And I've tried with my own kids that when something like that happens, it's, you know, it's sort of like brush it off. There's next year, you can always, you know, get try again. Don't just think that now that I didn't get it the first time, I can't, it's not going to happen. So what's your feeling about something like that?
I mean, again, it depends on the child, and it depends on the realistic, how realistic the goal is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, it depends on, you know, we, as a culture, we tend to believe that the higher the bar, the higher the jump.
Mm-hmm.
Only if you have the talent and ability to make that jump.
Right.
I mean, my parents made me take piano lessons. You have never in your lifetime met a person as unmusical as I am. I could have taken piano lessons for 40 years, and I would not have become a pianist.
Right.
It just, sorry.
Right, but that's what, yeah, no, that I completely understand. But then you've got the story of, you know, the author who sent in manuscripts to 27 places and got rejected from everyone except for one, and that's when everything happened. So, you know, I kind of feel like if the talent is there, and they go back and do more training, or they go back and they realize, well, what did I do this time that didn't get me to this place, and what can I do to get there? I think that is a fair thing to say to a kid versus the kid that's like, no matter what, you're still never going to be good at this, or you're, you know, I mean, not that we're going to say that to them, but
as long as it's, realistic.
Right.
I think,
exactly. Exactly.
That, you know, to, again, it also depends on, a child, you know, the age of the child. Right. But I don't think, in fact, it's necessarily a good idea to encourage a child in an endeavor which to him or her seems all or nothing, when the child really just doesn't have the talent or ability.
Of course.
Again, that's relatively rare, because there are only a few endeavors for which the requirements are really, say, physically very specific.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, if you were a gymnast when you were 8 and suddenly you grow 6 inches, the reality of it is you're going to have a problem with your career as a gymnast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again,
right.
But I think it all depends. I mean, I think that, We have to prepare our children for the possibility of failure, because the reality of it is that we are all at one point or another going to fail at something.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to prepare them for that possibility. We have to teach them, and this is really the important part, how to manage emotions when they fail, not to take it out on themselves. And most importantly, to set new goals for themselves that they can fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really the retrieval that matters. In other words, successful people are not people who never fail. Successful
exactly.
People are people who fail, don't go down for the count.
Mm-hmm.
When they fail. Analyze why they failed, manage the emotions that go with failing, and then regroup and set a new goal for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That they believe is possibly achievable. That's really the inside-out version of success.
Right. But, I mean, obviously, as a child, it's harder to, you know, it's very emotional. And you don't want to see your kid upset. And we've had instances with both of our kids where they've had that experience that was heartbreaking, but it was like each time grew from that. And that's what, and they did kind of step back and say, well, you know, I practice enough, or I didn't you know, maybe next time around I need to be putting in more hours to get to this point, because you can't successful in anything without that, you know?
That's right. You have, and you, what you need to do again is to help them work through the emotions that come with not succeeding. Right. I mean, that's really the, you know, almost every study shows that when we talk about being happy, it's not being happy. Happy feelings don't require management. Unhappy feelings require management. So being happy most of the time is less a question of dealing with your positive feelings, which don't need dealing with, but your actual ability to manage your negative feelings when things don't go right. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we need to be able to teach our children, along with, to go back to this earlier question of helicoptering and overly managing our children, micromanaging our children. We have to give them little mini lessons on the process of recovering when things don't go right.
Mm-hmm.
And the more often they do that and they see that as a part of the normal course of life, the better they will do when in their 20s they don't get the job that they're after.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get the promotion that they were eyeing, but it goes to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other mini failures that litter all of our lives.
Yeah.
The ability to deal with that starts when you're a child.
And that's something that I feel like it, and it really does change the course of, you know, the sooner you can really have this experience and not turn away from it, the more confident you'll be as an adult pursuing whatever career you want to pursue or relationship or whatever that may be. Because I feel like the ones that kind of run from the rejection and just stay in a little box, it, then you wind up being unhappy later on in life that you didn't do what you wanted or what you were hoping to do.
Absolutely. No question about it. And that's, you know, that is why, a huge part of parenting is teaching children to manage negative emotion and how to self-soothe healthily in times of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, you know, stress at not getting a good grade, stress not making the team, stress at not being invited to a party, stress at being left out, all sorts of stuff. But obviously that skill set is one that you learn in childhood, and which plagues unloved daughters, by the way. One of the skill sets they have to learn when they become adults. But again, it overly involved parenting deprives the child of those opportunities.
Right. You know? No, I totally get that, and that's why I'm trying my best to be involved, offer guidance, but not micromanage. And it's a fine line. But I feel like it has worked. My daughter and son are two very different kids. And with him, it's like peeling an onion, like trying to find out what's going on. It's a need to know basis. And my daughter is an open book. I know everything. So it's, I have to kind of figure out the two personalities. But so far, so good, I guess. We're still on the road. We're on the journey.
Well, you know, I think one thing that's worth saying is that one of the things that, in fact, makes good mothering so difficult is that it requires enormous amounts of emotional and mental flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the kind of, if you are someone who likes things just so, and your tendencies are to be more controlling than not, that is going to work pretty well, by the way, with a very rambunctious toddler, because you're going to be really good at setting limits and teaching the child about limits. Now, when that child gets to be 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and you still want things just so, and you believe that there's one way of doing things. That same parenting style that might have worked well with that toddler suddenly is going to have an epic rate of failure when the child is older, and even more so when the child is a preteen and teenager. So I think that one of the challenges of parenting, in fact, is to be able to be flexible and adaptable, not to be authoritarian, but to be authoritative, as it were, so that you really, you parse out what really your best possible responses to the situation, given all the givens, and the givens include the child's age, the child's personalities, the child's needs, how expressive the child is. Is this a child who's quick to shut down, or is this a child who's emotionally very open and volatile? I mean, all of those things factor in. So, you know, you really need mental sneakers on pretty much 24/7.
I know. I mean, first it's like you come out of the hospital with a baby. You don't know what you're doing. They don't give you classes on, or, you know, the very basic classes on how to take care of it. And then you've got all this stuff. It's like you need to go. I think every mother needs to take some sort of child psychology. We took it in college, but we didn't really pay attention.
Well, that's why it's a hard job.
Yes.
You know, because there's no, you know, there's no, it's like this quitting question. If I could give you a one-size-fits answer to when to permit a child to quit, I would be justly famous and probably rich.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal for what constitutes good parenting at every single, you know, there is... Yes, there are general rules, and psychology knows what constitutes good parenting versus bad parenting. But then there is so much on the ground thinking that goes into it, and your own reactivity, that you really, you know, my phrase is conscious awareness. As long as you are consciously aware of the words that are coming out of your mouth and how your actions are impacting on your child, the chances are really, really good that you're doing just fine. Mm. And if you're actually seeing your child, you ought to have a pretty good indication of how well you're doing.
Right.
On the other hand, if that child is constantly angry, armored, withheld, the moment has come to look inside.
Mm-hmm.
See what's... And not inside the kid, inside you, the parent.
Hmm.
So
it's a lot of work. But you, if you want to, you know, raise great kids, you got to put the work in too. It works on both sides.
Absolutely.
Well, this was a great conversation. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And I know both of you, I mean, your books are available on Amazon. Is there a website that people can go to for more information about you?
I'm on Facebook as Pig Streep Author. And it's kind of a cool community with very, very smart people. And we talk about lots of things, and not just bad mothers either. So, but although the focus tends to be unloving mothers, in truth. So,
right.
But again, thank you for having me.
Yes, and and definitely, if everyone wants to check out Peg's books, you can find them on Amazon.com. Thank you again.
All right. Have a great weekend. Bye.
You too. Bye.